When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode contains distressing themes and is intended for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised. On this episode of They Walk Among America, the man dubbed a psychopathic predator with all the makings of a serial killer is on the loose. Having escaped the Hawaii Psychiatric Hospital, it's a race against the clock to bring the fugitive in. Will he be captured before he can kill again? Welcome to episode 3 of They Walk Among America, a joint production between the Law and Crime Podcast Network and They Walk Among Us, the award-winning true crime podcast. Our case begins on the tropical paradise island of Oahu in Hawaii. The archipelago of 8 islands is a prime vacation destination for tourists. The island is known as the gathering place, with such tourist attractions as Waikiki Beach, Pearl Harbor, Diamond Head, and one of the most popular surfing destinations in the world, the North Shore, home to the famed Bonsai Pipeline. It's July of 1979, a year that brought roughly 80,000 tourists to the warm and breezy oasis, with dreams of festive luaus, fragrant leis and umbrella-decorated coconut drinks. Besides the sun and surf, Honolulu, the state's capital, was becoming an itinerary must-see and do for people looking to pick up souvenirs to bring back to envious family and friends on the mainland. And the place to do that was the famed Ala Moana Center. Opening in 1959, the shopping spot first started with 80 merchants on 2 levels, making it the largest shopping mall in the United States at the time. The world's largest open-air market was a premier destination for both travelers and locals alike. 29-year-old Sandra Yamashiro was living on Oahu with her boyfriend Glenn Pluitt, a carpenter by trade. On July 31st, 1979, it was a warm 90-degree day with no rain, and Sandra wanted to do a little shopping alongside the tourists. Randall Toshio Saito was 21 years old in 1979. Not much is known about his family or his upbringing, but what is known is that during that time and for the 3 years prior to 1979, he was an addict, using such drugs as LSD and PCP and alcohol to excess. Sandra and Saito did not know each other, but their two worlds would collide. At her red Mazda RX-7 in the parking lot of the Ala Moana Mall, she encountered Saito, who shot her in the face with a pellet gun, then stabbed her repeatedly to death. Sandra Yamashiro's body would be found by law enforcement inside of her vehicle, blood smearing the pavement below. However, at the time, local police would have no suspects, no leads, and Sandra's boyfriend Glenn returned to the mainland to be with family. It would not be until 4 months later when Randall Saito's ex-girlfriend would turn him in for the unsolved murder. 2 years after the killing, Saito would be acquitted for the murder of Sandra Yamashiro by reason of insanity. After the court proceedings, Saito's own defense attorney, David Shutter, had this to say to Hawaii affiliate KHON Channel 2 News.
I think Randall Saito will be in the state mental hospital or whatever facility they assign him to for a long, long time. And by long, long time, I'm referring to long after my death.
Saito once said of the killing, "I was in bad shape. I was paranoid." And that on the night of the murder, he, quote, "lost his grip on sanity and snapped." At one point, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Jeffrey Albert told the CBS affiliate KPIX that Saito was a psychopathic predator whose mental condition continues to represent a serious danger to the community, and that he fills all the criteria of a classic serial killer. During a psychological evaluation, it was learned that Saito was a sexual sadist, someone that has persistent fantasies in which sexual excitement results from inflicting psychological or physical suffering on their partner, or sometimes an unwilling victim. It was also determined that Saito was a necrophiliac, a person who is sexually excited or attracted to dead bodies. In 1981, Saito called the Hawaii State Hospital home for the foreseeable future. During his time there, Saito would undergo extensive psychiatric evaluations. And while he was dubbed a manipulative, psychopathic predator, he would be afforded parole hearings. One hearing took place in 1993. Where Saito went before a circuit court judge saying he was no longer mentally ill or dangerous. For his defense, the team brought on Hawaii-based psychologist Dr. Marvin Acklin, a clinical and forensic psychologist specializing in therapeutic and assessment services for children, adolescents, and adults. Dr. Acklin had this to say during his testimony. The sound captured by affiliate KHON Channel 2.
Based on my psychological evaluation of Mr. Saito, that the report which I wrote was based on, it was not my opinion at that time that he represented an imminent danger either to himself or to others.
The prosecution would fight back and bring in their own specialist, FBI criminal behavior expert Alan Brantley. Brantley was one of the first members of the prolific behavioral science unit of the FBI and would go on to investigate some of America's most notorious murderers and serial killers. Brantley stated that Saito was one of the most dangerous men the specialist FBI unit had ever seen, due to the threats Saito had made in the past. And on the stand, KHON Channel 2 captured the following testimony from Brantley regarding Saito.
He was going to go to California when he got released, buy a gun, return to Hawaii, and blow away the staff.
During the circuit court hearings, Randall Saito had a mustache and would be seen wearing a blue and white plaid shirt and gold wedding band. Between the time he was committed to the hospital and the hearing, Saito was married. His wife had once worked at the hospital as his patient advocate. The couple even supposedly got married on the hospital grounds in 1991. During the hearing, she too can be seen smiling in the gallery. But the judge would rule in the prosecution's favor, and Saito would be denied his release. Deputy Prosecutor Jeff Albert told affiliate KHON Channel 2.
Randall Saito is a very disturbed, mentally ill individual, number one. Number two, he's a very dangerous individual,
with respect to whom all the predictors indicate that if he were to be released, he would kill again.
Over the years of his incarceration at the Hawaii State Hospital, Randall Saito became friendly with the staff. It went so far as calling him Randy and describing him as a charming, likable guy. Not only did he marry, but affiliate KHNL reported that at least three members of the staff engaged in sexual trysts with Saito, even providing him with contraband, such as pornography and cell phones, in addition to conjugal visits. According to the Associated Press, Saito's unapproved sexual visits and romps were the tipping point for the Attorney General to rule in 2003 that, quote, mental patients did not have the legal right to conjugal visits. Records show that in 2015, Saito asked for unescorted off-grounds passes, but two out of three doctors found him mentally unfit. According to KHON, the report stated that assessments in the past have shown problems with lack of empathy, lack of remorse, failure to accept responsibility, and that he continues to be superficial in his relationships with others and is manipulative. Doctors assess Saito as a moderate risk of danger to the community unless under strict supervision. Deputy Prosecutor Wayne Tashima told Hawaii News Now, quote, because of the risk of danger he posed, we weren't comfortable with him being out there, even with an escort. Saito was once again confined to the Hawaii State Hospital building and grounds. Just 2 years later, in November 2017, Saito left the Hawaii Psychiatric Hospital. He was not granted parole. He was not allowed to leave for the day. He simply walked out. What transpired over the course of the next 4 days, no one can make up. And in fact, it's rather hard to comprehend just how a man imprisoned in a psychiatric hospital can just walk away. Sunday, November 12th, 2017, 9 a.m. The Hawaii State Psychiatric Hospital, which housed roughly 300 patients at the time, was constructed in the suburb of Kaneohe, a town on the southeast side of the island of Oahu, also known as the Windward Site. Sitting just off the H3, one of the three major thoroughfares that run across the island of Oahu, the facility is bordered by a residential neighborhood and the Kaneohe Forest Reserve, not to mention the chain-link double fencing with razor wire. No one saw Saito leave. No one helped Saito leave. No alarms were tripped. No sirens blared throughout the neighborhood. Saito had allegedly picked a combination lock on a fence and simply stepped out among the general public. By the time his absence was made known to hospital staff, it was late that Sunday evening, sending shockwaves and concern throughout the community. One employee of the Wynwood Community College, Ashlyn Lashuda, told Hawaii News Now, I'm kind of always alert of what's around me because I'm by myself over here. But it's kind of scary because he escaped so close to where I work and go to school. What investigators would come to find out is that Saito had a plan. A very strategic and well thought out plan. When Saito left the hospital grounds, he headed east in the direction of Kaneohe Park. Along the way, he picked up a backpack. It is not known who left it for him, but it contained falsified identification and a cell phone. Saito makes the near 1 mile walk to the park in 16 minutes, completely undetected. At 9:16 a.m., using his smuggled cell phone, he makes a call to a local cab company to pick him up. He told the cab driver his name was Bill, and that the driver needed to step on it, as he was trying to make a chartered flight. From a camera mounted on the front windshield pointed towards the back seat, Saito can be seen sitting behind the front passenger seat of the taxi cab, wearing a red jacket, blue Hawaiian shirt, glasses and bucket hat. His trusty backpack, his proverbial ticket to freedom, is in the middle seat next to him. From Kaneohe Park to Honolulu International Airport, roughly 12 miles, would take approximately 25 to 30 minutes. During the drive, Saito can be seen going through the contents of his backpack, almost like a kid on Christmas morning pulling out presents from his stocking. The bag contained an iPhone, a charger, and a change of clothes that he switched into when he reached the chartered flight's hangar. Saito arrives at 10:30 a.m. He pays the driver in cash along with the $1,454 flight to Maui. The flight from Honolulu to Kahului Airport in Maui is less than 45 minutes. Saito arrives in Maui at 11:30 a.m. An hour and a half later, Saito boards a Hawaiian Airlines flight from Maui to San Jose, California. He had booked the tickets through Travelocity using an alias. Saito would be in San Jose before the Hawaii State Hospital would even notify local authorities, and a violent and psychopathic killer was gone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Randall Saito's commercial flight would take him around 5 hours and about 2,300 miles away from the place he called home for decades. He would arrive at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time Sunday evening, 5:30 p.m. Hawaii time. Monday, November 13th, 2017. Saito tried to buy a used car, but it was reported that he could not find a deal good enough. Rumors swirled that he had a brother living in the Stockton area. Maybe Saito was planning on connecting with family. For 2 days, Saito spent much of his freedom holed up in a hotel room trying to evade authorities, as there was now a nationwide alert issued for his capture before he could possibly kill again. Meanwhile, authorities in the Kaneohe neighborhood on Oahu were scrambling to find out just how a murderer could walk away from the state hospital. Where was he? And what threat could he pose to the community? KHON Channel 2 News followed the escapee's case.
A state hospital patient with a violent past remains on the loose, and it's once again raising concerns about public safety.
Reporter Manolo Morales interviewed Deputy Prosecutor Wayne Tashima.
Why do you feel he's still a danger?
Well, once he committed the crime, we feel that he always has it in him. to commit the crime or another crime similar to that. It never leaves the person as far as we're concerned, so that's why he maintains that high risk or moderate risk of danger to the community if he's not escorted, if he's not being watched by someone. The type of crime he committed was really heinous, the circumstances surrounding the murder. So that's our main concern.
Manolo Morales also spoke with Kaneohe District Representative Ken Ito, and he had some chilling words.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this guy walking all around in town in the Windward Side, you know, we'd be very concerned. In fact, he's a desperado as far as you ask me.
The community wanted answers. The State Department of Health released a statement saying a thorough investigation was underway to gather more details to identify areas for improvement, and they were also aware of the need to support the safety of the public. With no sign of Randall Saito on the Hawaiian island of Oahu, investigators learned of his cross-Pacific flight to San Jose. In California, authorities, as well as the FBI and the US Marshals, were put on full alert. ABC 10 in Sacramento.
Let's go now to some breaking news. A Hawaii man found not guilty of murder by reason of insanity escaped from a state psychiatric hospital and caught a flight from Maui to San Jose. Randall Saito was committed to the hospital in 1981, 2 years after the woman was killed at a shopping mall. Authorities say he is a very dangerous individual. We'll bring you more information as it comes in.
Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. With Saito's description being spread across local airwaves, Saito called a local cab company to take him to Walmart, where he purchased another cell phone. But when he tried to activate it, he found that it was defective. Saito then went back to the store to return it, but was unsuccessful, as he did not have the receipt. Defeated, he returned to the cab, but unbeknownst to the fugitive, the cab driver recognized him from the local broadcasts and contacted authorities. The ruse was on. The cab driver told Saito that he needed gas before their next stop. What Saito did not know was that officers would be waiting for him at the gas station. On November 15th, 2017, at 10:30 a.m., Randall Saito was captured. In a photo provided by the Associated Press, Saito wore a green jacket, but rather than an Aloha button-up shirt, he was clothed in a black T-shirt, tan baseball cap, and black shoes, trying his best to fit in with society. He can be seen grinning at the camera while an officer slaps on the handcuffs. When he was finally taken into custody, Saito had more than $6,000 in cash and two different identifications. One was a driver's license from Washington that listed his name as Clayton Mugan Kawamoto, with a date of birth of April 19, 1963. Listed an address in Tacoma. The other was an Illinois driver's license with the moniker of Michael H. Pasca, date of birth October 25th, 1962. This ID had him living in Plainfield, Illinois. Both IDs listed him at 5 feet 10 with brown eyes and weighing about 190 pounds. And had impressive-looking holograms making the identification cards look legitimate. He was also listed as an organ donor. Just how did someone such as Randall Saito escape from a psychiatric hospital in the first place? The Hawaii State Department of Health would have to answer a lot of questions. In a press conference on November 17th, Governor David Ige issued this statement.
Thank you for joining us this morning. As most of you know, Randall Saito has been captured in California, pending positive fingerprint identification. You know, his escape should never have happened. You know, I am deeply concerned that such a dangerous person was able to escape from the Hawaii State Hospital and remain undetected for such a long period of time. Authorities and the public should have been notified much, much sooner. I've directed the Attorney General to fully investigate this incident and take appropriate actions. I've also directed that the Department of Health to fully cooperate with this investigation. And we are taking immediate steps. Personnel have been relieved of their duties without pay during this investigation.
November 16th. Randall Saito spoke from San Joaquin County Jail in Stockton, California, with a local reporter from ABC 7 News Bay Area.
How did you end up escaping from the hospital?
Well, okay, let's start with the reason I escaped. I escaped because I don't feel safe in that hospital. Every time I try to apply for release, they do the same thing, what they always do. They make me sound like a bad guy, you know, like I'm... And they won't give me a chance, man. So what I decided was I needed to escape and prove to them on my own that I can be out here and act appropriately, even though I escaped to do it. And so they say that if he gets out there unescorted, the first thing I'm going to do is get drugs or something and start going off and being shit crazy to people, you know, but that didn't happen. And I told them it wouldn't. That's not me, man. I know everybody wants to know how I did it to get here. I know they want to know how I did it. And what I did it with was bogus IDs and stuff like that. I mean, I did everything I needed to do. I had some cash stashed and, you know what I'm saying?
How much cash did you have?
Quite a bit, about $6,000.
$6,000. And how did you get the IDs?
Sorry.
Through the hospital staff, or someone from the outside?
I can't tell you that.
But you did have IDs, and were they, I assume...
Well, they had to get through TSA.
And how did you do that?
With the IDs.
What kind of ID was it? Was it another person's name? Was it your picture?
Yes, well, of course, it had to be a picture. It had to match it. It was another person's name.
A driver's license or a passport?
Passport is really hard to get.
So it was a driver's license. Gotcha. And so explain, how were you able to actually leave the hospital grounds? Even having an ID and cash, how were you able to get outside of the hospital?
It's not like there's fencing all around the hospital, because it's a hospital. It's not a prison. It's not supposed to be.
The crime, the second degree homicide, it's interesting that in 1993, I mean, obviously all your records come up. It was said that you still suffered from sexual sadism and necrophilia. And after you escaped, one of the prosecutors said that you fill all the criteria of a classic serial killer. What would you say to both of those?
The court appointed three panel all said that there was nothing wrong with me. I was not mentally ill. Since I have been in the hospital, I have told them that I actually fabricated that story get to the state hospital, okay? And, you know, I regret it. I regret the murder. Let's just make that clear. I do have remorse about it. I am absolutely contrite. No one else can be more contrite than I, because no one else is more responsible, but I can't change it. I mean, what did they want me to do? I can't turn back time, and I'm not going to offer anyone romanticism by saying that, oh, I wish I could change my place with, you know, places with the victim, or it's romanticism. It's not going to happen. It's not factual. It's true. I'm very sorry. But what do you want me to do? My story of what happened is the truth is I was a substance abuser for 3 years prior to that incident. Dude, I was in bad shape. I was really bad. I was paranoid. I was, you know, the beautiful thing about drugs is the more you do, the more stupid you are, and the more stupid you think you ain't. So at some point, I just lost it. I freaking lost it.
And then why did you decide San Jose?
Well, that was the cheapest ticket, basically. It wasn't like I planned on San Jose. I just kind of tried to find the cheaper ticket just so I could get to Cali to get a head start or get a start in the meantime. So this was all about buying myself time in the community to prove that I could be in the community without doing anything wrong.
And so when you landed in San Jose, what did you do once you landed in San Jose?
Oh, man. I couldn't believe I actually made it. It was surreal. I just want to say that I did not get out of the heartbeat. I did not. That's not my gig. That's not me.
After an escape from a psychiatric hospital, a trans-Pacific flight, and a four-day manhunt, Randall Toshio Saito was arrested. For the second time, his charges were for felony escape and identity theft. During a court hearing in which Saito attended via video conference, his defense attorney Michael Green entered a plea of not guilty. According to an interview with the Associated Press, Green said that, quote, "The escape is a foregone conclusion. Saito wants to fight the identity theft charge." The Associated Press reported that Deputy Hawaii Attorney General Corey Young asked the judge to deny bail, increase it from $500,000, or require it be paid via cash. Judge Colette Garibaldi ruled that the $500,000 must be posted in cash. In April of 2018, a judge required that Saito undergo psychiatric evaluations to determine if he was mentally fit to stand trial. They concluded that he was. Defense attorney Michael Green hoped he and the prosecution could come to some sort of deal regarding the particulars on how Saito escaped and just who may have helped him. Green was interviewed by KHON Channel 2 News.
To me, the most important thing is how could this possibly happen? And he's got the key, man. And if he wants to tell him, he will. And if he doesn't want to tell him, he won't. This was extremely well planned and carried out almost perfectly. And you would think that they would offer me a lot. I have no doubt the state will bring in psychiatrists or experts that'll say that he's very conniving and he's very deceitful. And there's something bubbling under there where he presents a danger to himself or others out there. But that's where the fight's going to be.
In September 2018, a deal was struck. And rather than facing up to 20 years in prison, Randall Saito pleaded no contest to escape and the identity theft charges and was sentenced to 5 years, with credit being given for time served. The investigation into how Saito escaped would be an in-depth one, but the State Attorney General's office found that no single employee was responsible. It turns out that Saito was missed in the morning headcount because staff did not have time to conduct it, an oversight that caused terror along both the Pacific coasts. During the investigation, however, six employees were placed on leave. Two retired and the remaining four returned to work following the inquiry. Since the escape, the Attorney General's office and defense attorney Michael Green learned that Saito may have, in fact, had help. Green told news channel KHON in February of 2019 that another patient had confessed to helping Saito by giving him the fake ID. The two were frequent visitors of the Ko'olau Clubhouse, a center nearby that offered additional assistance to patients in the state hospital. It is still not known, though, where Saito received the cell phone and thousands of dollars in cash. When Saito completes his jail sentence, a spot for him will be waiting in a newly secured wing of the hospital where he won't be able to escape. Hopefully. Randall Saito did walk among America for 4 days as a free man. But thanks to the media broadcasting his photo, an observant cab driver, and quick-acting law enforcement personnel, Saito is back under secure lock and key. You just never know who is walking among us. This episode was researched and written by Kelly McLear and edited by Brad Mabee. For more information on our series and notes on this episode, please visit theywalkamonguspodcast.com. And for more on the Law and Crime Podcast Network, please visit lawandcrime.com/podcasts. This has been They Walk Among America. Thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.